This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app, this is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And thank you for listening. Welcome to the Dom Salvia Show. You can be a part, 855-752-4842, 855-75-Civic. I just PS on the board and jazzed as hell. It's Monday. We got our pal, Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy from the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, joining me this hour. Harvey Kay, welcome. Happy Hang Mike Pence Day, man.
Oh, I guess you weren't kidding when you said no, to use that.
Hey, man, we're just calling them as we seize them around here, Harvey, and that's what they were chanting 4 years ago today. However, today a little less dramatic. The vice president, of course, the loser in the election, had to call out the numbers, and that had to be a little tough, but no drama today, Harvey. What are your thoughts? Welcome.
I've been thinking about this all day, though I didn't prepare my words at all. The word that comes to mind really is ironic. Mm. It's ironic that the man who instigated a mini insurrection, a battle for Congress around the Congress, who was, as you said, a battle that included, nooses in preparation, that kind of thing. I mean, to think that today, in a peaceful transition, or at least a peaceful recognition of what transpired in November took place. I mean, it actually hurts. It's as if not the gods, but as if the devils in the world are putting us through this. Because the Biden administration, specifically Garland, the attorney general, didn't have the decency. I thought you might imagine I say courage, the decency and courage to prosecute him as an insurrectionist. And moreover, that I think it was the Supreme Court that disallowed Colorado's effort to ban him from their ballot, because according to the Constitution and the 14th Amendment, if you have been an insurrectionist, you are not entitled to run for political office, federal office, I assume specifically. No, I mean, it's just outrageous. It really hurts. And I don't know how other people feel. I can tell you that I can laugh at these things in some ways and the irony, mm-hmm. but it is the case that it is very unnerving that this man who lives on spewing hatred and speaking vengeance is now going to be occupying the White House. And we've already seen, by way of his nominations or the nominees that he's been talking about, mm-hmm. for the cabinet positions, that he has no sense. The word decency comes to mind again, but he has no sense. It's not even just decency. He just doesn't care about the United States and what appointing the likes of Tulsi Gabbard to be Director of National Intelligence. And originally, Gates being mentioned for the attorney generalship. I mean, it's just wild. I mean, if my father was still alive, a decorated veteran of World War II, he would say to me, "What the hell is wrong with this generation?" Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, he said that to me once before, and after Bobby Kennedy's assassination, actually. And I could just imagine him being just shocked at witnessing what's going on. I mean, I'm shocked. It's just unbelievable, really.
Harvey
but
Kay.
On the other hand, yes, on the ahead. Other hand, Jen, I'll just mention, I know we were thinking of getting to it later, but maybe we come back to it. Today is the 84th anniversary of a very positive moment in American history, a very progressive moment, when Franklin Roosevelt, on January 6, 1941, delivered a State of the Union message in which he projected a vision of this country as a champion of four freedoms: freedom of speech and expression, freedom of worship, freedom from want, and freedom from fear. Now, he didn't mean that we had achieved that. He meant that we would commit ourselves after the war to pursuing those four fundamental freedoms. And maybe later, if there is time, we can come back to talking about
that. Yeah, and that was that speech, was that literally on today's date in 1941?
Yes, January 6th, yes. And by the way, and this is the other thing, because I know we're going to get to all this stuff. This Saturday, 5 days later, 3 years and 5 days later in the State of the Union message, is when Franklin Roosevelt delivered his vision for an economic bill of rights for the United States and called on Congress to try to enact it, or at least try to realize the aspects of it in American life. So this is a week every year, ever since I began my work on FDR, you know, I guess, was it 20 years ago? Well, some time ago. I mean, I could not, you know, I thought, wow, this is going to be every year. You know, I try to remind people of these things, not because they're just really nice words, but because they really did inspire progressive action.
Yeah,
I mean, it shaped a generation. And what do we have now for inspiring words? We don't have any inspiring words. People seem to be, well, the politicians we have don't know how to create them and don't know how to speak them. And the rest of us seem to, you know, just go along.
Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, our favorite Delano Democrat. I want to certainly get to the four needs, issues
four
there. Yeah, four freedoms. But you brought up Merrick Garland. And I had a discussion last Friday with our pal James Santel, former U.S. attorney, you know, worked in the Justice Department. And I got to tell you, man, I know how bad Bill Barr was, right? He came out, got in front of, well, he was in the Bush administration, got a bunch of people off there, came out, got in front of the Mueller report, and did all sorts of shenanigans, basically acting as Donald Trump's attorney. Although he did get out before January 6th, he saw the writing on the wall. But Merrick Garland, and I think it was very, it was bad for what Bill Barr did to misrepresent and lie to the American people. But I got to tell you, Harvey, I think the slow walking or the non-committal for Merrick Garland, come on, time is of the essence. We had all the evidence you need. I mean, what do you need? It's pretty, if you're going to do an investigation, this was like the easiest coup to investigate in American history. It was all right there.
Right.
It was all, come on, people were videoing themselves participating in the insurrection, man. It was like a selfie insurrection. How can you not find the will to pursue it? Harvey, I think Merrick Garland has really grievously failed us. What are your thoughts?
Oh, absolutely. And to imagine that we were all upset once upon a time when Obama nominated him to the Supreme Court, you know, McConnell and the Republicans blocked it. They wouldn't even consider his nomination. And now we realize that his nomination would have been as tepid as imaginable. You know, there's an irony here too, which just, I happen to know this. Franklin Delano Roosevelt had a chief of staff, a lawyer, in fact, a judge, former judge, named Samuel Rosenman. And this was it was Rosenman who really put together the famous Brains Trust back in 1931 when the campaign for president was just beginning. And it was Rosenman who really helped guide the FDR years, 12 years of Roosevelt's presidency. And what is amazing to consider is I believe it's Rosenman's granddaughter whom Garland is married to.
Oh, really? Wow.
And you would have thought that somehow or other the courage and the chutzpah, as Rosenman was Jewish, would have found its way into that, you know, into the life of Merrick Garland. But no, not at all. I mean, not at all.
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. That's our guest this hour, Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy at University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. We're going to move on to some of these other topics, our four freedoms, FDR, State of the Union. But we do want to get your comments in on the anniversary, January 6th, 4 years ago today, an insurrection occurred. And now the voters just put that same cat back into the White House. Less drama today, but a couple of callers. Let's get to it. Jack from Racine, you are up. Welcome, Jack. What are your thoughts?
Hello.
Heather.
I was listening earlier today, and I heard some replay of comments and just heart-rending testimony from Capitol Police who were there being beaten and by this mob. And I just, those are so effective. And I'm just thinking, I don't know what's going to happen with these pardons, and I really want to leave you guys with a question as to what you think people ought to do. I know where I'm at. People were out with signs in the streets when Trump was elected and inaugurated, and now if he comes through with pardoning these people who did this to these Capitol police officers, I don't know. It's a different mood. I'm not sure what's going to happen. I think there's going to be a lot of people very upset whether people are going to be they're back in, they're kind of digging in their hole, not watching the news and stuff. A lot of people, are they going to stay on top of it? I just want to encourage people to, you know, stay on top of it. I'm not sure what the right thing to do on that particular date is, but, you know, we got to be ready to jump on the stupid things that we know Trump is going to do, not just stupid, probably more criminal. And that being one of them, releasing these killers, really, some of them, you know, and many of them, just pardon them and free. And people, you got to make sure people realize Biden didn't pardon these people who had committed murders, etc. You know, he commuted their sentences, and there's a big difference. Someone's going, well, Biden did it. No, Biden didn't do it. What do you think?
Thanks for the call, Jack. I think one of the points is, what do we do? Well, obviously, we got to stay informed. I think that's the first thing we got to do. And we got to be able to articulate a response and an argument back to folks, I think, that says, you know, oh, Biden did it. You know, Biden did this and Biden did that. There are distinct differences on actions between these two men on commutation and on what Trump has said he's going to do with pardon. Harvey Kay, I did see that Enrico Otero, the head of the Proud Boys, he's doing 22 years for a seditious conspiracy, is specifically asked Trump for a pardon. How do you think that's going to go over in the party of law and order if Trump follows through on that particular campaign promise? We've got about a minute left in the segment, Harvey.
Well, I mean, seriously speaking, the days of the Republicans where the party of law and order are past. I mean, this was a Republican administration, Republican president who called out the worst elements to try to bring about a coup, basically. I mean, we're talking about a coup d'etat is what would have transpired. You know, I was trying to imagine what kind, at least symbolically, what could people have done today, okay, to register their protest?
Yeah.
You know, and I imagine they would not have allowed any crowds near the Capitol building. I think they learned their lesson. But maybe people could have all turned out around the Lincoln Memorial in mass, you know, how about a million person march around at the Lincoln Memorials to remind people that the Confederacy almost won the day on January 6, 1941. I mean, that was my thinking. And I mean, the caller's right. I mean, I'm sure he's rather upset because the fact is we don't know of any protests that occurred whatsoever.
Yeah.
That the man who wanted to stage a coup, you know, definitely did launch an insurrection.
Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay. Going to stick around for this hour. More of your calls as well, 855-752-4842. Come back with us.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin at Green Bay, joining me this hour. You can do so as well, 855-75-CIVIC. Before we move on to the four fundamental rights on the 21st Century Economic Bill of Rights, maybe, you know, looking back to get some inspiration to move forward, Harvey Kay. We got one more caller. I want to clean up the lines here. CJ, you are up. Welcome. Happy New Year, CJ. What do you got for us? Uh-oh. What happened to CJ? Got too many. He's on the line. CJ, come on, man. Five. Nope. All right. Hey, we tried, man. Give us a call back. Appreciate it. 855-75-CIVIC. Just a real quick headline here, Harvey, before we move on to other items. The Ross story reporting The judge denies Trump's demand to delay fraud sentencing. So we'll take it. I mean, he's going to keep on throwing it against the wall and see what sticks. So far, Judge Mershon is not wavering in that. So, but I'm not sure what the point of sentencing is if there's not going to be any fine or consequence or jail time or probation or ankle bracelets or, you know, I don't know, some sort of consequence, Harvey, but at least it will stick with a conviction.
Who prosecuted that in New York? Does it mention, was that a state prosecution or a city prosecution?
Juan Mershon, that would have been, this is the fraud, right? So this would have been, this was Alvin Bragg, I believe, the Manhattan DA. This is on the,
district attorney or state attorney general of the state. Yeah, boy. I mean, talk about, you know, we used to talk about Teflon presidents, right?
Teflon. Yeah. Well, they're all Teflon, you know, until they get caught, right? Who was the mob guy that was the original Teflon Don? You know, and he kept getting off and off and off. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're Teflon until you get convicted. Then you're longer the Teflon. Well, John Gotti, that was his name.
Yeah, right. Except with Trump. But Trump, man, he gets convicted and keeps walking.
Weird how that works. It's almost like there's a couple different levels of justice in this country. Let's move along. Let's talk about something inspiring. And, you know, you mentioned the Four Freedoms speech of FDR back in what, 1941?
Right. 1941.
So right. I'll call this Four Freedoms Day. It sounds a whole lot better than Hang Mike Pence Day, but I do that one for the megas. The Four Freedoms, let's dive into that a little bit and let's reiterate what FDR said and how he defined those. And how do you think that relates or can translate into 2025, Harvey?
Okay. Well, the first thing to understand is that when FDR delivers a speech like that, the Four Freedoms speech and later the Economic Bill of Rights speech in 1944, one of the things about it is he has tested the waters and he feels a certain confidence that when he pronounces these kinds of things, and I'll read what he said in a moment, that he knows the American people are with him on it, okay? Even if they don't necessarily raise the banner, he knows they're with him on it.
Yeah.
And it's January 41. We have to understand war is already underway, not for the United States yet, but it's already underway in Europe, okay? Nazi Germany has basically conquered all of Europe, and the British are holding out, and Roosevelt is eager to provide what came to be known as Lend-Lease, where we would provide the materials to sustain Britain and its allies against the Nazis. That was otherwise known as the arsenal of democracy idea, that we would be the arsenal of democracy. It was also the case that a war had already been underway for
almost. So isn't this a real fancy way of saying we're going to supply some armaments and whatever they need to help them, although we're not going to get directly involved?
Yes, exactly that. Right. But FDR already knew by January of 41 that the U.S., whether it wanted to or not, would end up in the war. Okay. And but what do I mean by that? Well, they had enough intelligence to know that Hitler's plans, once Britain was defeated and occupied, which never did come about because we provided the kinds of materials they needed, that in fact they were assuming they would then take all of North Africa. And from North Africa, the Americas, North and South, became a target that they could put into the, you know, they could see it, so to speak.
Yeah.
And flying from West Africa to Brazil and the likes of that wouldn't be that much of a challenge. On top of which, their subs were basically patrolling all over the North Atlantic. So FDR knew that what he had to say that night in a speech was in many ways a kind of advance call to arms to Americans. And in the speech, he warned Americans that the dictators, meaning Hitler specifically and Mussolini, were not going to tell us when they were going to attack, and we needed to be prepared. So we would not only need to provide material and armaments to the Brits, we would also need to provide it to enable us when the time came to afford an army and a navy that could win a war. But then he also said, by pursuing this defense effort, did not mean we had to give up the great advances that were made during the 1930s New Deal against the Great Depression. And he actually called for sustaining those initiatives. But then he stops, or I should say he pauses, and he says, this is what they call a peroration in the speech. These are the key words. He says, in the future days which we seek to make secure, we look forward to a world founded upon four essential human freedoms. The first is freedom of speech and expression everywhere in the world. The second is freedom of every person to worship God in his own way everywhere in the world. And I'll shorten the next two because they're a bit longer. The third is freedom from want everywhere in the world. The fourth is freedom from fear anywhere in the world. Now, the first two, freedom of speech and freedom of worship, they're in the, you know, the first, if you like, four freedoms of the First Amendment. Mm-hmm. But he was taking the New Deal experience, providing government and labor efforts to, you know, basically to overcome the Depression. And he was turning that into freedom from want. And then freedom from fear had to do with the fact of racism and anti-Semitism. It was time to transcend those. And when Americans heard those things on the radio, they understood what he was saying. And they actually became the words that guided the war effort. Now, FDR was no saint. He made terrible mistakes along the way. And I'm not talking about the affairs that he had, okay? Right. What I'm talking about is the fact that we'll leave it at that.
We'll leave it at that. We're taking a short break. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy, FDR, an inspiration from the past, perhaps someone to look to for the future. Come back with us, 855-75-CIVIC.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
Welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, joining me this hour. Jess P.S. on the board. You folks on the lines, 855-75-CIVIC. We got some callers holding, so let's get to it. Talking about, of course, today, January 6th. I like to refer to it as Hang Mike Pence Day, but it is also, as I've been edified by my buddy Harvey K. over here, the anniversary of FDR's Four Freedoms speech in 1941. Freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom from want, and freedom from fear. We'll get into that and some more of your comments as well. Let's start with Dana from LAX. Welcome, Dana from La Crosse. Happy New Year's, man. What do you got for us?
Hey, everybody. Say, I like the 1941 version better.
That's what I'm saying, man. If we're going to celebrate one, let's have it be FDR's 1941 speech.
Yeah. Say, you know, there's not much Mershon can do, really, that's going to have any type of impact on Trump. A fine ain't going to matter to him. Any of that stuff. Because, you know, his fans are going to pay for it. I thought of something last night that Mershon could do that I think would probably have some pretty good impact, the most that I can think of. What he should do is make Trump create a video, and then that would a video of Trump himself explaining what he was convicted of, and then how and why our system of justice found him guilty, and then force him to send those out on all of his media channels, social media channels, and to all of his email lists. And then I think that is the only way to preserve the history, because they're going to try and rewrite it. And this way, history is preserved.
I like it, Dana. That is a great idea. A little community service.
Yeah.
On record for all time.
A little civic service, too.
Yep. All right. Thank you for the call, Dana. Happy New Year. I like that idea, Harvey. What about you?
I think that's great. And maybe just for the fun of it, we could put him in one of in the movies, the old prison garb of the stripes,
yeah.
You know, put him in something like that, doing just that. You know, I may not be in jail, but this is what it would look like.
That's awesome. Thank you, Dana. Appreciate it. 855-752-4842. Wouldn't cost nothing. Wouldn't really stop him. He's got plenty of time before he gets inaugurated again.
I think he
again.
Would explode. I think just the process of trying to sit down and say those words out loud would cause a little bit of spontaneous combustion.
It would be very difficult for him to get through it, which would make it all the more glorious.
So much better.
855-75-CIVIC. Kurt from Madtown, you're up. Welcome, Kurt. Happy days. What do you got for us?
Say, Harvey, I'm hoping you can speak on this. My other half is reading a book. It's called The Demon of Unrest by Eric Larson. And she's been reading sections of the book. And the South, especially members in South Carolina, how they plotted to stop the certification of President Lincoln, and how they also plotted to assassinate him. So from what she read, it's like January 6th all over again. And we're repeating history yet again.
Hmm. The Demon of Unrest. Thanks for the call, Kurt. Harvey, your comments.
That comparison is the closest that Donald Trump will ever get to Abraham Lincoln in historical stature. the whole story leading up to and in those early phases of the Civil War are absolutely astounding. And I'm not familiar with all of those kinds of details, but they really are astounding. And it's striking. In fact, oddly enough, I was thinking just today about the fact that I would never have expected. Somehow I had a very optimistic view of American history since the time I was in college in the late 60s. I could not have imagined that it would be in the course of my lifetime in the 21st century that we would see the kind of activity that we saw in 1860 and 61. And so, which is to tell you just how shocking it is. And what worries me a lot, I've been worried about this for some years, is the degree to which these kinds of things will come to be viewed as normal. And the cherry on top, or the final push towards that normalcy or normality, whichever word you want to use, is the fact that he has just been confirmed as the winner of the November elections. Mm. I mean, in that sense, if somebody said there is no justice, I would have to defer to that remark. It's unbelievable to think that. And the assassination attempts against Lincoln, I'm sure, were far more numerous than any of us realize. Yeah.
Thank you for the call, Kurt. 855-752-4842. When we talked about the anniversary of the Four Freedoms speech FDR gave on this date in 1941, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom from want, and freedom from fear, was that as much as trying to prep the American population for entry into World War II? I mean, was that the whole basis of this speech, a slow walk, perhaps? I mean, we're coming out of a very protectionist age after World War I. You know, in some regards, I kind of see that playing out right now. You hear, you know, Trump talking about all these tariffs and wanting to kind of pull back of Americans' influence around the world. Was that in the context to really get people prepared for what was, as you mentioned, ultimately going to come?
Yeah, well, I think it was twofold. Yes, it definitely was that. In fact, in the book that I wrote, The Fight for the Four Freedoms, I came to the conclusion in the course of writing that it was a call to arms and almost a declaration of war, because what he's doing is he is projecting what America is meant to be about, going all the way back to the Declaration of Independence. In fact, when I was working on the Four Freedoms speech, I saw it in line with the Declaration of Independence, Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, and now FDR's For Freedom speech, really. And so I think it was a, you know, telling Americans, look, they're going to come for us, the dictators, the fascists, the Nazis, the Japanese militarists and imperialists. And we have to remember that that when we fight, whatever mistakes will have been made in this war effort, that this is what it's about. This is what we have to envision the post-war world being about when that time comes. I think you're right. I think it is in many ways that it wasn't that he was trying to get them militarized. It was that he wanted them to understand that, yeah, that there was, if you like, a progressive mission. I know it sounds very imperialist to say the United States had a mission, but when you're facing fascism, you got to start believing that there's a purpose for opposition and for going to war against fascism.
And there's a reason that the fight will come. It is the freedoms of speech and expression. Of whatever religion you choose or choose to not engage in, not forced upon you, a freedom from want.
Right. That's right.
From fear. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And we shouldn't forget that we're talking about, and when we're talking fascism, I mean, I remember 10 years ago, none of us would have used it, okay, to refer to Republicans it just wouldn't have come to our minds to use them.
Right.
But
it's
nowadays,
amazing how times have changed, Harvey.
Yeah. I mean, I can tell you when I really mentally resisted using the term regarding the formation of the MAGA forces and Trump.
Because you don't want to cheapen it, right? I mean, it's a
exactly.
historical bad word, let's call it, in my opinion.
Yeah. But when you consider the kinds of things that he has been saying that he would like to do and accomplish. And by the way, the proof is the company one keeps, right? Mm-hmm. And Elon Musk is proof of that very fact. I mean, Elon Musk is now literally pursuing, his ambition is to get this far right wing party in Germany to become the ruling party. And those are the folks who were like the heirs to the authoritarian regimes of the past. Mm-hmm. So it's amazing. You know, I would also add that if we ever had bothered to go after the billionaires as Bernie had asked us to, we might have been able to temper the power of the likes of Musk and Bezos and that lot.
Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Temper, yes, temper. You know, and that's the thing. I think, you know, we have the power in the numbers. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, one person, one vote. You know, Musk got a lot of money, but he's only got one vote. And if we allow ourselves, as people do, to be manipulated and cajoled by the money, and that's not an uncommon thing. It's not the first time it's happened. It won't be the last. That's how it rolls. But I think when people get fed up and they tune out and they turn off and it feels like there's nothing we can do. A guy's got all the money. What are you going to do? Well, that's exactly at the time when we need, you know, the community and people to come together and recognize where the power actually stands. It is with the people. We, through our representatives, can make the laws, can say, hey, if you're going to be hoarding the billions of dollars, here's your new tax rate. If you're going to, you know, I mean, if you're going to be bringing jobs in or out of the country, here's the breaks. Here's how we, as a country, are going to do business from here on out. Here are our priorities, for example. Talk about the New Deal, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, these kinds of things. These are our priorities. If you're just going to, you know, be an Elon Musk and hoard the money, we as a people, well, we can do something about that. We literally can make laws to address that, as Bernie Sanders has mentioned, as you brought up.
By the way,
yes.
I'm sorry. Well, in 2 years into the New Deal administration, FDR was elected in 32, so it's 33-34. In 1934, he had already suggested this in 33, but he seriously called upon Congress to find a way to limit the wealth of the rich. And he did so because he said, one, it's not really good for the economy, and no less important, it's terrible for democracy. They because of the power that they will wield with that money in terms of, you know, public information and the media. What the media was a different form than it is today, but you're talking newspapers, you're talking magazines, you're talking radio, which FDR fortunately learned how to master with his fireside chats. Yep. But he was seriously worried about the power of he called them the economic royalists, to compare them to the the political royalists of the American Revolution period.
Doesn't it? I mean, he was serious. We're doing this, dealing with this exact same thing still right now. You have the billionaires that are only in the Washington Post, the LA Times. Right?
Absolutely.
You have Musk over on Twitter, you know, limiting people's ability to express themselves on his platform if they're critical of him. I remember how they used to be so upset when people would get, you know, shut out or tuned out of the social medias. And now the guy that owns it, if he doesn't like what you're saying, he'll pull your check mark or whatever the case may be. But the point being is the money still controls. I mean, you had a Washington Post cartoonist resign after the Post would not publish the cartoon piece of what a bunch of the oligarchs, a bunch of the tech bros, and Mickey Mouse bowing to a statue of Donald Trump. For some reason, they thought that was just beyond the pale. But what is the damage done? Well, there you have it, man. It's supposed to be the fourth estate, but when it's all controlled by the billionaires and the economic royalists or whatever the term was, Harvey, we are dealing with these same problems now, or perhaps it's a continuation. Maybe it ebbs and flows. What do you think? It seems like you're talking about now when you're talking about, you know, 30s and 40s.
Absolutely. When you consider that Musk must be worth about $350 billion right now. And what, you know, he's been looking into buying either MSNBC or CNN. I mean, how much worse could those channels get? Imagine if Musk is running them, right?
Right. You'll find out real quick. I hear... who's the guy that got convicted of the Parkland shooting guy? What, right? The hard right winger guy. What's his name? He's got his InfoWars.
Alex Jones.
InfoWars is up for sale. Maybe they'll go and buy some InfoWars. Folks are listening to the Dom Salvia Show. That's Harvey K. We have one more segment. You can join us on the lines 855-752-4842. We talked about the freedom, the four freedoms speech from FDR. I also want to talk about, how does that relate to now? I know we bring this up. I know you're a big fan, Harvey, but I know you're the expert on the 21st century economic plan for the people. Let's talk about that as well. Folks, you can chime in as well. 855-75-CIVIC. Come back with Harvey K.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, wrapping up this segment with me this hour. Harvey, thank you for joining me. Mondays are so much fun when you come around. We talked about the Four Freedoms speech, 41, in 1941 on today's date. But the other issue, the other conversation, something that we've talked about quite a bit, and I want to continue that conversation, 21st Century Bill of Rights. Harvey, it seems, and it's kind of maybe evident today as some of the conversations as Vice President Harris was, you know, reading the numbers and presiding over the electoral count. What happens to the Democratic Party? Where are they going? Are they wandering in the wilderness right now? And I wonder, and I know you're a big fan and the expert on FDR, where the inspiration is, what the message is, what a party should focus on, number one, certainly to benefit this country, but politically to, you know, bring working folks back into the party, to, you know, a big tent to attract people to the Democratic Party. Is that the 21st Century Bill of Rights? And what does that mean? And how do we go about getting people dialed in to push something like this as an inspiration piece? Because, man, I tell you, I'm looking for some inspiration these days, man. We just see the insurrectionists getting, you know, basically back in office again. What are we doing, Harvey, and how do we do it?
Yeah, well, thank you for asking that question, because seriously, this has been on my mind for several years now. And it becomes, it doesn't go away simply because the Democrats lose. In fact, what happens is it becomes all the more imperative that Americans, that the Democrats, let's be careful. Let's make, the Democrats are in desperate need of a vision. They are lost right now. No one can tell you. I told a congressman from Wisconsin one time, we can walk down State Street in Madison and say to people, tell me, what is the Democratic Party? What does it stand for? And they won't be able to do it other than to tell it to you in terms that will try to deny what the Republicans assert. No, the Democrats need a vision that will remind them of what, first of all, of what it means to be an American and of what the past has afforded us and can literally show us we can ourselves do. I mean, the New Deal, the war effort. These two things proved that the people united will not be defeated, basically. So today, what the Democrats need to do, and I wish they'd pay attention, if they're not going to pay attention to me and Alan Minsky, the authors of the Economic Bill of Rights for the 21st century, at least go back and read a little history, preferably the fight for the four freedoms, but read some history so they can understand about the four freedoms and FDR's call for an Economic Bill of Rights. Look, this became a part of American thinking. I mean, most of the listeners here aren't going to be as old as I am, but when I finished college in 1971, I expected national health care to be the next thing Congress made happen.
Right.
I mean, it was inconceivable that we would now, 50 years later, find that the contributions to American life, the achievements of the generation of the 30s and the 60s has been under siege for all these years. Americans need to be reminded of what their ancestors were able to accomplish, and remind themselves that we too are Americans, or as Henry Demarest Lloyd once put it, to defend the achievements of our fathers, we have to create new achievements for our children.
Mm. The capabilities of the citizens of this country. Right. And hopefully it doesn't come down to a world war and all those kinds of things for us to realize that. Because that's, you know, we don't want those things. And perhaps we get a little complacent. Yeah, but think about the profit that's been made. You know, sliding insurance companies in to take a piece off of that health care. There's a lot of money there to be made, Harvey. If we're not busy making money, you know, how are we going to provide everyone health care? Because isn't that really, did we sacrifice all those things in the godly pursuit of unholy profits?
Well, all I can say, look, let's assume for a moment, that Americans were truly healthy. How's that?
Okay, let's assume that.
But it is the case that every time a person sits down to figure out how they're going to cover their health insurance, or for that matter, every time people sit down to try to figure out what benefits they're entitled to in health insurance, or what program of health insurance should they secure, they're going to probably get ulcers. I mean, frankly,
yeah.
I mean, I would think people would want national health care to take the stress out of life, if only that.
If nothing else. If all else remains the same, you still have access to the same doctors and all those kinds of things. It seems like a no-brainer. So what is it? I mean, Harvey, I think it would poll well, generally speaking. A lot of these things that perhaps people can't answer, what the Democratic Party stands for. Well, you know, Social Security, Medicare, those kinds of things, right? I think the default would be some of those FDR kind of programs. What's the pushback, do you think? Why isn't there more of a connection or more of an articulation, a battle cry for an economic bill of rights, or you know, even if we start about, you know, just universal health care?
Well, let's start off with the reality that the billionaires don't only give to Republicans. They also give to Democrats. And if the Democrats ever started sounding like FDR again, you can imagine what the billionaires and the multimillionaires would be whispering in the ears of their agents in Washington and lobbyists, okay? So I think it's a big hurdle to overcome.
It is a big hurdle, and we need the message. We need some guidance. Perhaps looking backward, it will enable us to look forward. Go ahead,
and
Harvey,
that's where the labor movement comes in. That's where the labor movement comes in. The labor movement needs a vision as well. And I think in 1944, when FDR proposed the Economic Bill of Rights, labor, both the American Federation of Labor and the Congress of Industrial Organizations, grabbed hold of that idea. And for years, that was their platform. We need to remember that labor and the Democrats need a vision.
Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Thank you once again, Harvey. Happy New Year. We will talk next Monday.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Dom Salvia Show. Now stick around. Pete Schwabba, Nightlight, coming up next. See you tomorrow.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.